It's Saturday, July 6th, 2013. We're broadcasting live from Santa Cruz on the central coast of California. This is KOSP Public Radio 88.9 and KOSP.org. It's time now for Geek Speak.
From my heart and from my hand, why don't people understand my intention?
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. With me in the air room with me today is Bonnie Jean Primsch, broadcaster at large and mediator. Hi.
I'm here with you.
You have been here for 3 weeks while I have not.
I've just been hanging out. I don't know. He'll be back at some point.
Pulling in random people I don't know and they're on the show. Yeah. It's fantastic. It's been really a blast listening to Geek Speak and not being associated with it for so long. 3 weeks is the longest stint I've gone where the show's actually been on air.
What's that been like?
It's been really interesting. Let's say hi to Don also. Dr. Don Matika. Hi, Don.
Hi, how are you?
Thank you so much for being on. You know, I regularly will have issues with, information about medical information, right? And I'll go, well, I'll just come to the show early and sit in with Dawn and be on her show because it's awesome. And I never do that. I'm always coming in and trying to frantically figure out what's happening in the tech world while you're doing your awesome show. For those podcast listeners of Geek Speak, Dawn does a wonderful show every week right before us for an hour. And though the geeks all have laptops in front of them and there's a group of us almost always, Dawn does it by herself and is much more impressive than us. So do listen to Dr. Dawn's show. How do you get to the podcast for Dr. Dawn? I mean, KOSP.org, of course.
Well, you can just go to AskDrDawn.com.
There you go.
Follow the link.
The other thing, so the reason I asked you to come on today is because I actually needed your services this last week. The other day, I woke up with a fluttering near my right ear, and it was of early morning, and I reached up to get the moth or thing away from my face, and it fluttered louder, and I couldn't find it on the outside of my head.
Because you had a little eardrum flutter?
I thought maybe that was the case, but it felt very bug-like. And that's when I realized the morning would consist of me trying not to freak out as there was a bug in my ear.
You know, that is a colloquialism.
How so?
He's got a bug in his ear.
All right.
That's true.
That's right. I never thought of it that way.
Well, now you know exactly what it means.
Oh, that's horrifying. So as the creature decided to go through its experience of being trapped and not wanting to be there, and me trying to figure out how to get it out of my ear, it's amazing what you start thinking about.
Wait, was there really a bug in
your
ear?
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Oh, yeah. And for all the podcast listeners that have those little earbuds, yeah, I haven't been wearing those much lately. So, you know, first thought is I got to talk to Dawn, find out, you know, how much jeopardy I'm in. So I text Charlie, who produces the show, and Dawn. I'm like, bug in my ear. And, you know, we poured liquid in to try to flush it out, and it then would be quiet for a while, and then it would awaken and move in different ways. Oh, yeah. So
every week you come on, you find new ways to freak me out, Lyle Troxell.
If it's not the NSA or Facebook, it's bugs in your ear.
Toxic meme.
So the medical facility I go to is in Scotts Valley Medical, which, Don, you've been at for years, but alas, you no longer are there.
No.
You have your own private practice.
Yes.
And I have not changed my process to be there, and so I'm driving to Scotts Valley and trying to get in speed. And when I get there, like, well, it'll just be about an hour and a half or so. I'm like, okay. Now, by this time, I've killed the creature. I'm pretty sure it's not moving anymore, but it's still in my ear. By the way, using tweezers,
dead bug in your ear.
When I grabbed the tweezers to try to pull out the thing in my ear, I went, this is how people that have issues with reality think about their brain and their head and stuff. And so one of my thought processes was, wait a second, maybe there's not really a bug in my ear. Maybe there's something wrong with my brain. So I said, Maggie, will you please listen to my ear? So she's, and sure enough, she could hear the flapping, and then I knew, okay, this is an external thing. Well, internally external thing affecting me. But that was definitely my thought process.
It was all in your head.
Oh, yeah, it was in my head. So wonderful experience going there, and very quickly, as soon as I got into the room, they were able to pull it out. Now, luckily for everyone, you can see the video of it being pulled out of my ear. And here you go. Bonnie, this is for you. This is the bug that was in my ear.
It's a very small bug.
It's a very small bug. Yeah, you stick it in your ear and make it crawl around.
It's like a little mothy.
Yeah.
Like a little
itty. So anyway, I'll link to the video feed of that. But Dawn, how dangerous is it for bugs to climb? Is there things that can happen to you?
Absolutely not.
Really?
It's really the worst thing that can happen is a case of swimmer's ear.
Yeah.
Really, okay.
Trying to flush it out.
Yeah. Well, the other thing I think that could happen is if I really was freaking out, I might have stabbed myself with the tweezers.
Well, yeah. If you got in there with a sharp object and were chasing the moth around, you might conceivably punch a hole in your eardrum.
So for future knowledge, this is a constant thing for me. I think, oh my gosh, let me ask a doctor what the real case is. What's the problem? So now I know, and everybody knows, if you have something in your ear that's crawling around, most likely on this hemisphere at least, it's not something that's actually going to start eating you or controlling your brain. It's just a little bug that got stuck.
Unless, of course, the aliens have landed.
Yes,
and that's
in which
their
case.
Mode of entry. But our earworm overlords.
So
you will be assimilated.
Yeah, that's right. Well, thank you, Dawn. Now, tell me your practice that you're doing. Now, you are very careful, as we all are on radio, to not represent our own self-interest. This is public. This is non-commercial. And the whole point of us being here is to be volunteers and support our community, which you and I have been doing for how long have you been doing, Dr. Dawn? Ask Dr. Dawn.
Oh, well, here on KUSP since 1998.
Ooh, you beat me by a couple years.
You were, I think, still in high school when I started. So.
Young man.
Well, I appreciate the tireless efforts of you donating your time. Every time I listen to the show, I love it. And I listen to the podcast, too, because, of course, during the show, I can't really listen because I'm getting prepared. So thank you for doing that. And your practice, you're seeing patients now down on Mission Street.
Right. It's been really, for me, a journey since I started doing radio and getting these questions.
Yeah.
I started researching them. And as I researched them, I thought, oh, well, that sounds like a good idea. I think I'll try that in my practice rather than penicillin or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I kind of got taught by the community to be more integrative. And then I was introduced to the Institute for Functional Medicine here at KUSP. I got a flyer and I thought, well, I'll get a press pass. So I went as press.
I do that sometimes too. That's how I have my current job,
$700
actually.
To get into the thing, you know. But I drank the Kool-Aid at that first conference and have subsequently, you know, paid their exorbitant fees in order to become a functional medicine adept. And it's integrative medicine, very scientific, all the biology, all the biochemistry, but you really understand it at a level that's a systems level.
Right.
And it's gotten more and more to be my love, is trying to integrate the Chinese medicine, the acupuncture, the systems thinking, and the very useful pharmaceutical agents that are part of conventional medicine. But the economic structure of medicine simply doesn't allow for a long term for taking time with patients. It's all rapid throughput, low price, high volume is the name of the game in primary care. Can't do it. I want to be an integrative doctor. So I am out there on the west side and opening a practice that's a completely different model. You can link to it from my practice site from the AskDrDawn.com. If anyone is interested, please check it out.
And, you know, just searching Dawn Motyka does it. It's Motyka as well. And, of course, you can find your show on KUSP.org, which is a simple URL to remember. Dawn, thanks for coming out. I hope that your new way of doing practice is interesting. And, of course, this is very much structured part because of the medical insurance changes, the governmental insurance changes have kind of prompted people to make decisions that are different than they normally would make.
Well, also the changes are adding to that rapid throughput pressure.
Yeah.
And so it's just we're going to be flooded with people with lots of unmet basic healthcare needs, and their needs need to be met. But there's no place or time to really do integrative work right now within the system.
Well, thanks for doing your show, and thanks for being a doctor. It's fabulous to have you as a friend and physician.
It's being a great journey.
Thank you so much, Dawn.
Thank you. Catch you next week on air. Bye, Bonnie.
All right, Bonnie, let's get to the geek news. Man, we got more to do. So that was my ear mourning story, by the way.
It was horrifying.
Yes.
I was horrified by it.
I'm sorry. I didn't want to give you note before it. I wanted to kind of have you experience it.
Thanks.
We're
going to
do a few experiencing on air today. We're going to do some experiments with Bonnie's brain. But first, let's talk about this new story.
You know, it's fine. You can abandon me for 3 weeks and then just experiment on me live on the air. It's totally fine. I'm here for you, Lyle.
I'm glad.
Yes, I was reading up on, and it seemed fairly innocuous at first, a radio telescope picked up 4 fast radio bursts.
Bleep, 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 bleep.
Yeah.
Like that? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're super quick, like billionths of a second.
Hmm. Okay.
Like super quick. But apparently from deep, deep space, like the one that was furthest away was 11 million light years away?
That's a ways, yeah. 11 billion light years away.
11 billion light years away. Crazy, crazy far. But apparently they're exciting because they should be happening all the time, but they've been super hard to pick up. Like, instead we pick up light leaks and stuff that are actually happening from Earth-generated nonsense. But what happens when a fast radio burst comes from deep, deep space is it passes through ionized gas, and then you can kind of figure out how much baryonic matter is out there.
Right.
Which is,
the normal matter.
It's funny. We call it normal matter, but it's like 2.5% of the matter out there.
But the stuff that we're made of.
The stuff that we're made
of. Baryonic matter.
Yeah, stuff that we get.
Right.
Like, we understand it because it's neurons and protons and quarks.
The stuff we learned in high school physics kind of classes.
Right.
Okay, so that stuff is a very small percentage?
They figured about 70% is dark energy. Mm-hmm. Another 25% or so is dark matter.
Right. Which is different. The two things are different.
Yeah. So that leaves 5%. And they thought it was all... They're like, well, it should all be baryonic matter, right? But there's also ionized gas. You got your plasma.
Yeah. Okay.
You need that too. Mm-hmm. So as these radio bursts, which could be from, I don't know, black holes doing something.
We're not sure what it is, right?
We don't know what the source of these things is. So that's another interesting mystery.
Mm-hmm.
But because we've proven now twice... since we've been looking for these things, that we are capable of being captured.
These little bursts.
It happened right toward the beginning of the millennium also.
Okay.
And they finally figured out what that was like 6 years later. It takes a long time.
Yeah, of course.
It's a long con we're talking about here.
Yeah.
But by knowing that they can be recorded, we can take that information to create radio telescopes that are more suited to picking up just that, because according to calculations, they happen every like 10 seconds or something. So
basically
all over the sky, we should be able to pick them up.
So if I can summarize, because we've now know these little tiny bursts, which we're not exactly sure what the sources are, coming from deep space.
Yeah.
Now, if we build tools that help us look at those things, we can use those to map what other materials out there, the baryonic matter and such, in the universe.
Yes. Ooh, yes.
Very cool.
And now able to distinguish between light leaky ones and real from deep spacey ones.
Oh, I love it. Okay. Yeah. And I also like that there's not really a consensus on what these bursts are coming from.
Right.
It just makes them more exciting.
Well, yes. And the thing I take from that is that they could come from several sources.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Right. It's just another thing that's getting through to some degree from far away.
And who knows, right? With better detection, maybe you can figure out which ones are from what kind of thing.
That's right.
Like, now we just know broad category, like, oh, that's a key, but we don't know which particular lock it opens.
This is Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me is Bonnie Jean Premsch. You probably know her better from Geek Speak than I, because in the last 3 weeks I haven't been here.
I'm glad
to be back. Who's this guy talking? The best thing about, Sunday morning, being in the south of France and picking up, you know, I've got Wi-Fi and GeekSpeak slowly downloading. I'm like, oh, that's cool. And then I'm listening to it as I walk around this ancient town across the planet. And you guys are just chatting away, but with people I don't know. That's the thing. The alternate geeks, I've met them all, but I don't know them.
Right.
So having these conversations, I very much feel like a listener, not a participant, which is rare for the radio show I've been doing for 12 years.
Right? Yeah, it doesn't happen all the time.
Yeah,
but what's that? Do you feel a bit like, hey, what's happening without me? Or is
you
get like a secret little thrill out of it?
I like it. Yeah, I like it a lot. I think it's awesome. This is Geek Speak. I'm Lyle Troxell. We'll be taking calls a little bit later, and we got some news. Stay with us. I've got Google Glass, and I'll tell you all about it. And Bonnie gets to see it, too.
Record.
So, Bonnie, thank you for being here while I was gone. And actually, one of the episodes, we didn't get up through the channels of the way the things work at the station, because the little technical detail thing that I can sometimes do when things break, I didn't do. So the 15th of June is actually still missing from our feed. But I haven't decided if I'm going to put it up before this episode or after this episode. So if you've heard this and you can't find number 15, go back to iTunes and like look through the stuff, blah, blah, blah. You know what happened right before I left? The day after I left,
What happened?
You know what? Go follow me on Twitter and pester me. I'm Lyle on Twitter, and that seems like a good way to communicate with me lately. I went and got invited to get Google Glass. So here's my Google Glass. Go ahead and describe what these look like, Bonnie.
Well, and you've become instantly cyborgy. I mean, there's like a rod. Some people have seen this, but there's like sort of like a thin metal sort of line above.
Kind of like a headband, but it's where the glasses are.
It's like a headband, yeah. And there's just enough sort of frameworks that they are balanced on your nose.
It's like glasses without any lenses.
But they don't, yeah, without any lenses, but also without most of the frame. Like,
yeah.
It only goes around like just to kind of like help define the top of your nose.
And then there's something else going on with
them. And then on, for me, the left-hand side, for you, your right-hand side, there's sort of a wide band, and I'm assuming that's the computery part.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got a little bit of a screen that lights up every once in a while that I can see, and they fit over your ears, and
okay,
it's very modern looking.
Awesome. And it's got a USB port, a micro USB port. It's got a projector inside there, a little screen that projects an image for me on a prism in front of me, which is called the glass prism. That's why they're called Google Glass. And they have got a camera, a 5-megapixel camera that can do still pictures and 720p video. It's got 32 gigs of RAM in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a speaker. It's got a Bluetooth and Wi-Fi antenna in it.
Yeah.
And basically, I wear it all the time now. I look like this all the time.
So you have become officially...
I have been officially. So we'll take a picture of you guys.
A glass hole.
Okay, glass.
Okay.
Take a picture. And there's a picture of Bonnie with Rick in the background in the studio. So I'll put that up on the site. Now, you can actually see a lot of pictures of this stuff.
It's very possible. If I only saw one of them, and it was a quite banal picture. It was a snoozer, frankly.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was just like a little piece of a minivan and some road.
Yeah, kind of boring, huh?
Yeah, it's possible to take very, very...
With cameras, it is.
...nondescript photographs with Google Glass.
I normally carry a Nikon SLR camera, a single-lens reflex camera, traditional, like, wedding photographer camera-looking thing, right?
Okay, yeah.
And I carry that everywhere. And 1 year, I did a new portrait a day every day for a year, right?
That.
So I'm a photographer in some sense. And with this thing on my face, it's the camera that's the fastest thing possible for me to have, right? So I take a lot of pictures. There's a button on the top too. So I just took another picture, and I can do video and stuff too. But the thing that's so cool.
I have to be careful when I pick my nose.
Yeah, don't do that. It's not radio all the time. So I went to this great conference in the south of France and spoke about the company I work for, the technology I work for, which, you know, my boss keeps on going, why don't you mention on the show? I don't mention on the show because it's not a commercial show. So. There you go.
There you go. That's
you can
not,
follow
that's
me.
That's why you're here.
Find me online. You'll find all about it. Talk a lot about it online.
There you go. Do a little investigating.
Yeah,
it's
go to Lanyard or something and find my video talks and all
enjoy
that stuff.
Puzzle.
But I go to this conference with all these geeks in south of France, and I don't think anybody outside the U.S. can get these things right now. The Google Glass is not actually for sale yet. It's only a developer thing.
So you were the darling of Paris.
I'm a little early adopter. Yes, that was my experience of the trip. I probably showed this thing and put it on people's faces. I don't know. I would say 150 to 200 people in France.
And sanitize.
And, yeah. Oh, no, I've got diseases. You want to put them on?
Yeah, that's great.
Go ahead and put them on, Bonnie.
I'm only going to put these on. Okay.
Yeah. You can use them with your glasses.
Is it okay?
Without.
Because I do have the spectacles.
Try them without your glasses. I don't know. You know, I thought this will be fun to do on the radio, but maybe it was another insane idea. Move them over so the things.
I can't see. Hold on.
Oh, my gosh. This is.
Take
I can see
the
Geek Speak episode just falling along. Put the little ear. Yeah, there you go. Okay, so now tap the side of your head. That's it. And then say that.
Okay, glass.
And then, like, you can record a video if you say.
Record a video.
Oh, I said it for you, actually. So it's recording a video. So we'll put this up on, too. But I'm going to take
my... Do I just look cross-eyed now?
You look ridiculous.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You look like a complete freak. Can you read it, though?
It says 09, 10.
That's how long it's going to last.
Now,
yeah.
I see nothing now. So I don't know if it's like secretly recording without me looking at it or what.
So there's been a lot of talk about these. It was recording for 10 seconds. You could have extended it.
Oh, but. I see. Okay.
So the idea behind this thing, right, is that you're have
be for looking cross-eyed in public.
You have exactly. You have at your eye level a camera all the time, and you also have a clock. I tell the time with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have found it. I thought it was going to be creepy and horrible. Okay, because technology
but
is always a little scary.
But I'd wear those glasses again and again.
Exactly.
They're
you know the Doctor Who episode where that happens? They get people get controlled. Oh, watch Doctor Who.
I think of the Saturday Night Live fake commercial about the hypnotist show on Broadway.
Oh, I don't know that one.
It's like if we go in, you know, like we loved it. It was great.
An hypnotist show.
We'd
that's
watch
great.
It again and again.
So I have found it wonderful. I did find out like all the news stories we hear about, right? Instead of waiting until I check my Twitter account, I have it right in my face, right on my eye. I don't know. I'm in this space back and forth.
And is what you read on Twitter that fascinating?
Exactly.
That
do you need
moment?
It in your eye? Exactly. I think the best thing about it has been the camera. And, of course, it's also my Bluetooth device. When my phone rings, I know who's ringing because it shows a picture of them, and then I can answer it. So just like a normal Bluetooth. But it's I'm kind of addicted to it. One of the things that's caused me to be addicted is the developer product is actually quite expensive. It's $1,500 in this first round of 8,000 people that are selected. And that's really too pricey. It's ridiculous. But when you have something that costs that much and it's really fragile and you have kids, you want it protected all the time. Mm-hmm. So it's always on my face. It's that way.
It's the easiest place to keep
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Anyway, Google Glass has been, the best thing about it for me has been I've shown it to hundreds and hundreds of people, and I talk with them,
oh,
and I touch
exactly
their face.
They know exactly what they're doing, Lyle.
Yeah, they do.
they know exactly
selected the
what
people.
Doing.
That, yeah, exactly.
Look at this.
This is so cool.
You're spreading the meme.
So, do me a favor and go up to find me online. I'm on the best. Oh, the thing that this leads into a story.
Yeah,
that's right. It leads into a story, and that is that. When you use this device, when you want to share a picture, you're actually sharing it to Google Plus. And as we know, there's Facebook, there's Twitter, and there's Google Plus, and there's other ones too, but they're even less important than Google
Plus.
Yeah,
remember Orkut? Is that a thing?
What's that?
Orkut.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I love the there's a meme out there where you make fun of different social networks, and the Google one is, you know, it's all these like I like to talk about what I had for breakfast. I'm on Facebook, you know, and
yeah,
it's like that
yeah.
kind of thing. And the Google one is,
I work at Google.
I'm on Google Plus. And it's true. Like, the reason I'm using Google Plus more is because it's attached to my face now. Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, when I go to France, I emailed I got the confirmation letter for my flight, mm-hmm. and it went to my Gmail account. So then I'm the day before I leave, it's actually at the end of the day on Geek, the day before I leave, I'm packing. And I've got Google Glass on my face, and I'm still playing with it and burning through battery like crazy and taking pictures of silly things. And I cycle through some of the screens, and one of the screens is my flight information. What gate I'm at, you know, terminal, and the... No, that wasn't there yet. What was there is the weather was in Ben Lomond, which is where I live, but also in Clichy, which is where I was headed. It was there the day before. There's no reason for the weather to be on my eye, but it knew I was traveling
just
the next day.
Creepily taking care of it.
And I was packing and wondering what I need to pack. And it was there in my face. That was kind of cool. And then the next day, I'm in LAX trying to do a transfer. I'm missing a flight because I've been paying attention to glass too much. Mm-hmm. And I had to run across the airport, and I'm like looking up and sweating. And I ran like a mile in that, you know, half yeah. hour with bags.
You know, because it recorded how
it recorded the whole thing. I have this little time, this little clock going away. And I get to the front of the Air France, and all of them speak French. They're all Phoenicians. They're all French.
Phoenicians.
And I run up to this group of people, like this sweating, digitally enhanced human being.
Yeah.
And I feel horrible. And I'm like, the light is good. And they're in French, like, yes, monsieur, what is that on your face? And then, so I have this great picture of all these Air France staff looking at me, puzzled and confused. Anyway, enough of that.
You're just delighted to be absorbed into the Borg, aren't you?
I love it. I love the instant fame, I guess, it takes you. But the thing that's interesting is, right now, the average news article, this is an article by TechCrunch, and I'll link to it from geekspeak.org, yeah. has been shared about 890 times on Facebook. That's liked on Facebook. So about 890 times. So that's the average of a news story, if you will. Mm-hmm. And 147 times on Twitter, so less. And 19 times on Google Plus. So Google Plus is not winning here.
Yeah, it's not winning.
Yeah, 2%.
Yeah.
And as I'm using it, I'm frustrated with pieces of it. I love some of their photo management stuff, but I got to say that I feel split and torn on where my content goes, right? I have my own site, which has all my photos, and then I have Google Plus, and then I have a Flickr account, and then some things are in Twitter. Do you feel distributed too much? I feel distributed online. What do you feel like, Bonnie? Is that?
I mean, I only go to so many sites. First of all, I only post so many places. I have more blogs than I require.
Yeah, everyone does.
They are abandoned. You know what I mean? I have several abandoned blogs.
Yeah.
So no, I don't feel over distributed. I do feel like if I were to properly distribute myself, I would need a personal assistant to do my distributing. So I don't see what the hullabaloo is about George Takei having a ghostwriter, for instance.
You think that's fine?
It's fine. It's a celebrity.
It's a good writer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So George Takei doesn't do his.
He has a ghost joke writer. Or he pays a dude like $10 a joke. And there's a lot of good material coming out of George Takei's like Facebook presence.
I heard a joke on a show that loves Security Now. It's kind of geeky. Mm-hmm. So this NSA guy, staff member, right, mm-hmm. goes down to a bar mm-hmm. and says, hey, can I get a beer? And the bartender says, domestic or imported? And he says, what's the difference?
Ooh,
nice, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, okay. Anyway, we're going to... That was really... I feel bad.
Yeah, dirty.
Hey, if you'd like to ask us questions on GeekSpeak, we are welcome to take your calls. We'd love to have you.
Obviously,
on.
We've got room for you.
The phone number is 800-655-5877. Again, that's 800-655-5877. Should I do it one more time because it's kind of fast?
Yeah, slow it down, will you?
All right. 1-800-655-5877. Back to our feed. Next news story.
Frankenstein.
This is... Yeah, I actually want to skip over to open source.
Oh, okay.
I had this... In my job, we are making open source software. Uh-huh. I work for 4D. I work on a product called Wakanda. It's a JavaScript database and web server and full stack development environment. I say that a lot. In any case, that's what I do. And in that environment, it's open source, so you get to see all the source code. You kind of get the feeling of open source, right, Bonnie?
Yeah, it's come on in, let's develop this thing together.
Yeah, it's very much like that. And yeah. And here, this is what I've done, and take a look at what it is. Mm-hmm. And we had Richard Stallman on a while. He's a big motivator of the Free Software Foundation, and he actually defined a license called the GPL, the GNU Public License. And there's another one, it's called the AGPL. And I've learned a lot about how they function from a corporate perspective. So let's say you take a whole bunch of resources and start developing software. You got all these people, right? And they're coding away and doing amazing things. And that's the team that I visited in France. That's why I go to France and chat with these people who are incredible. I love the tech they're doing, and I love getting a little lost and being outside of my scope. It's fun. So we talk about databases and indexing, all this different stuff. And those people all have to get paid, as do I in this company. But we do make the software open source. We share how it works. So the question is, how would you protect, how do you pay all these people in that kind of structure?
And well, if you're doing it public radio style, you'd get grants that don't really cover any of your expenses.
And then no one gets paid well.
Yeah.
That's like all our friends here.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
But how are they doing it?
The way you do it is you offer a couple different licenses. You do share the source. And having open source does not necessarily mean that people have the rights to use it. But there is something about transparency. You know, this is how I'm doing this process is much better than, oh, don't worry about it, I'll take care of it. Because when you say, oh, don't worry about it, I'll take care of it, like Skype does, for example, that's a closed software source, you don't really know what's happening. So when you're using it, you're trusting the corporation that makes it, right? And that, as we've learned more recently in the news, is kind of a dangerous thing to do. So it's very nice to be able to see what's inside the source. Then you can get people that are really good at stuff and go, oh, there's a security problem here, or this is an issue here. Mm-hmm. And we see, for example, Microsoft Windows and stuff has vulnerabilities, Internet Explorer has vulnerabilities. Those get discovered by really cool hackers that kind of push the system to its limits and find a problem and then exploit it. That's exploits. Yeah. But in open source, it's very much a different, people find them before they actually become a problem, because a lot of people are looking at them and finding out where the mistakes are. Mm-hmm. So there's a fundamental wonderfulness of developing software that's open source, not just because it's free. Okay.
Yeah.
So now, the next question is, how do you support a community of people developing around it? And the GPL is used in this very strange way. So let me explain the GPL. The GPL says, you can use my source code, you can use this program, you can do anything you want with it. If you ever then share what you've made with somebody else, you actually also have to give them the source code. So you're basically, it's like the copy, it's very much like the Creative Commons idea, mm-hmm. share and share alike, right? Mm-hmm. GeekSpeak is a share and share alike, right? You can take the content, cut up our words, reuse it. You've got to mention us when you do it.
Yeah.
And you have to say to other people, they can do the same thing.
Ah, okay.
So it kind of forces collaboration.
So this thing that I have done, you can now remix.
Yeah. But when you remix it and you release it, you also have to tell people they can remix it.
Right.
Right. So
like
it's kind
that.
Of this, it's this really interesting thing of Stallman's. He actually invented this idea that it's a license that gives you freedom, but it forces more freedom after that of the stuff.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
So,
Pay it forward.
Yeah. So let's say, Bonnie, you want to make a mediation website that helps people with general questions and answers. So you have them fill out a form, like an application of some sort. Mm-hmm. You decide to build it in a project that's using a GPL or an AGPL. Slight difference. I won't get into the details. So you want to release a new product, but you want to charge people because that's your living. That's how you make a living.
Right.
So let's say you want to charge them a certain amount. If you've taken a software that's AGPL to build that on, you cannot then make money off that, but you have to share your source code. So then some other person that does mediation could grab your whole package that you spent all this time on, launch a new site, and then you have a competitor that you've actually created.
Please help me solve this problem.
Yes.
I am wondering about that actively.
Really? How to make money by a
mediation? Because I've learned sort of an open source facilitation method, and I want to earn a dollar at it, right? But I don't want to...
And you're not sure you want to go the public radio way of please help me? Because I'm cool?
No, I'm just not sure how to do it in such a way. Anyway, there's a King of the Hill problem there.
Okay.
It's easy to be King of the Hill when you're the only one on the hill.
Yeah, sounds we'll like we got more time. Later. Okay. Yeah. So this GPL, so if I offer you software and I say, here's the GPL license that wraps the software up, you now are forced to share. And therefore, it's kind of hard for you to make money on it. Right?
Well, not from the code itself, right? Like there might be a service which is beyond the technology that provides the service.
Kind of. And actually, the AGPL is about that, where if you use the GPL or AGPL software, when you then release, you have to share all of what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And that makes it hard to be a commercial enterprise. It's hard for you to get Instagram if you're using AGPL, because anybody can copy your code and be Instagram too, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So that AGPL license is not great for the commercial environment. It's really awesome for sharing. Mm-hmm. So companies are doing dual licenses. They say, use our software, use AGPL. If you need the protection of making sure your code that you develop is private, we'll sell you a commercial license of the same thing. And that's the general way of dual license. This is how a lot of the companies make
it. Let me get my head around this, because that's interesting. I didn't quite get it.
I need you to ask.
So there's the open source aspect. Mm-hmm. Take this, do what you will with it, and let other people know that they may do what they will with it.
Force other people to do what they will with it.
Yeah.
If you've done something, like, changes.
If you want to use this, you gotta.
Yeah.
And then there's also, we'll sell you a commercial license on the side.
Right.
But and the why commercial would they license get the commercial license on the side if they've got
it? It's the exact same thing that you're getting, but you get the right to, when you modify it, hide what you've done and not have to share it.
So how do those two universes work at the same time?
They work at the same time because you get one by default, and one you have to sign a contract and pay money for. That's it.
But it's when just you have the one by default,
and you then make an application, you have to share it. If you let anybody use it, you have to share your source code.
The modified source code.
If you then buy a license from me, for example, and I give you a system that you can build things, and you make an application on top of it, you don't have to abide by the GPL license. Instead, you can hide your code. Now, all the stuff I made is still available to everybody, but also I could add on other features to you. So that's how people play in this universe of open source.
So do I have it right? Like you get the open source license, and that means the source code that you used as a base, you have to pass that source code along,
right?
Not your mods.
Actually, when you get the commercial license, you get a copy of the same source code as the GPL, and I give you the grant to hide everything, and you don't have to share anything. You don't have to play in the open source world at all. You can develop your own things and be completely private in everything you do. If you didn't pay me, all that's left is the GPL, and then you have to share. So you basically, it kind of works out.
The paid one precludes the unpaid one.
The paid one includes the software, but not the forced sharing of the information. It's the thing that I love about it.
You're not getting both licenses at once.
No.
You can choose which one
you have to pay for one. You get the other. Everyone gets one for free, and that's the one you share, and everything's shared. And then if people are developing there, let's say I make an application for the school that my kids go to, and I want it to be worked on. So I work on it for a few years, and then my kids graduate from high school, and somebody else was like, oh, it's open source, and they keep working on it, right? In that environment, I never planned to make money. I just wanted to help the school. It's perfect. AGPL's great, right?
Yeah.
Here it's public.
Sufficient.
It's great. Right. And during that time, I might have actually made a change to the package that got incorporated up the chain. So the entire package got better, which is cool. Mm-hmm. If instead I'm a company like Bonnie and I do mediation and I want to write an application and I want to launch a service, let's say I hire a few employees to make this application. It takes a couple years. You put thousands of dollars into it. You don't want that to be able to be shared. So the entire time you've bought a license from me where when you change it, you don't have to share. And that's all you're buying is the right not to share.
Okay.
Which is kind of cool. I mean, I like the idea that the commercial
space.
You have
to opt in to not sharing.
Yeah. You have to pay for not sharing. Isn't that cool?
That is cool.
I like that. Anyway, so I found out a lot about that this week.
But does it equal people actually putting food on their family?
Or in their family.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Good question. I guess that's what everybody's...
Are people living off of that?
Right. You can call us with questions and comments about technology. The phone number is 800-655-5877. Again, 800-655-5877. All right. The TSA, Bonnie.
Yeah.
You know the
those
TSA.
Guys. That's the Transportation Security blah, blah.
Right. All Things D has a wonderful little article by Mike Isaac, which I will link to. This is definitely a geek bit, meaning that you got to see it to believe it.
Okay.
They've got an Instagram account.
Oh.
And it's as creepy as you'd think.
Now, what are they Instagramming?
Well, here's a picture of a gun, an Instagrammed gun. I'm assuming TSA took that from somebody and took a picture of it. Now, this might be a joke.
But kind of a cool photograph.
It's Instagram photos are always kind of cool, right? Little burn marks and it's all fictitious. But I love the idea of looking through what the TSA took. TSA took something from me. I messed up and left a pocket knife on my person and it's gone. Oh, well.
You know, one time I left a Swiss Army knife in my backpack and they did not take it.
I almost got through.
And I went through the line and went, oh, my God. I left my knife in my backpack. I said it loudly. I could have swore a TSA agent was looking right at me when I said it, and nothing happened.
Here's a picture of a camo plastic gun, which is obviously a toy, and then it opens up and has a giant knife in it.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
Anyway, we'll have that up at geekspeak.org at the end of the show when we get the shows up. And fantastic.
What, are you just enjoying the lethality? What is it about what you're seeing that tickles you so?
I like making fun of the TSA.
Yes.
Because, you know, when you travel, you just don't like them.
Yeah.
The whole experience is bad.
Yeah.
Though, I have to say, coming back in the country, all the TSA wanted to look at Google Glass, and I was putting them on their face and stuff. That's why I thought I was going to get through with the pocket knife, but they caught me. We're going to take calls with questions and comments about technology in just a moment. So the phone number is 1-800-655-5877. But first, and you're listening to KUSP. This is Geek Speak. Everything we talk about is up at geekspeak.org. At the end of the show, I'm Lyle Troxell. In the air and with me is Bonnie Jean Primsch. Stay with us.
You're listening to 88.9 KUSP and KUSP.org. You can follow us on Twitter or like us on Facebook.
And you can follow GeekSpeak at geekspeak.org and like us on Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff as well. We're all over the place, as everyone is. On social media.
We're well distributed, apparently.
What do you use for your social media stuff? Mostly Facebook?
Mostly Facebook, because that's where the people are.
Yeah, I guess so.
It'll be where the people are.
I keep forgetting
about Google Plus.
You do?
I keep forgetting.
It's funny, we use Google a lot. And you know, Miles, who's also one of the people on the show, just got hired. Did I tell you? Miles is now going to be working for Google. So we're going to be even more creepily attached to Google.
Okay.
I got to say, I'm definitely in that factor of creep, especially now that it's in my face.
Yeah.
I don't know. They're not supposed to be evil, right?
Right.
Right.
It's a very useful motto.
It's like perfectly aligned to be creepy motto. We're not evil. We mean it. From SoCal, Rich, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, I've got a couple questions about open source. There's some things I don't think I get. Mm. So this idea that you can sell a license to somebody to use open source stuff and not share it, can anybody do that? So could I take an open source project and start trying to sell licenses myself?
No, you cannot.
So how's that controlled?
Well, first off, there are a lot of different licenses.
There's
a license called the MIT license, and this one basically says do anything you want with it. And the only thing you can't do is stop people from doing anything they want with it. So that one is you could take it and you could change two lines and you could compile the application that was under that license and you could sell that. In fact, that happens a lot. A lot of software that we actually buy has open source software inside it. And we're paying for the stuff they've written. And the MIT license very much supports that. The GPL and AGPL license are forcing continued sharing. So if your software is under that license, you cannot protect it. In fact, when you modify it in certain ways, you have to share your content. Corporations, lawyers and corporations, do not like this license. In fact, there are policies, strict policies at large corporations. You cannot put AGPL software at all on the computers. So this is actually why there's so many distributions of Linux, for example. Ubuntu does not put any AGPL license in their software. Therefore, if you install Ubuntu and you do things out of the box with it, you do not have to forcefully share all your code. There's other distributions of Linux and even packages you can put on Ubuntu that have AGPL in them. And if you use that, you are forced to share your content. And that space is so creepy for the businesses that they have these really strict rules. So that's two examples, AGPL and MIT. They're very diametrically close. There's other ones too. The Apache has a license foundation. There's a lot of them. But the idea behind when you actually create something yourself and you've made it from scratch and you own it, you can decide to put any license you want on it. And the license is really an agreement you make with somebody else that uses it. Most of these licenses are, if you download this, you're agreeing to this license, which is kind of cool in the sense that copyright kind of protects you because since you wrote it and you put that in there, it's clear that it's part of the package. So in the scenario that my company takes advantage of, and actually other companies that make a lot of open source software but then also want to sell it, they offer two licenses. They give away the software with one license, you're forced, and then we offer the product with another license if you pay us. So if you enter a contract, you can ignore the AGPL license and you can use the other license. And this reason this works is that we wrote it ourselves. Does that make sense?
I think so, but I've never quite understood. So if I, let's say, download an open source thing, modify it, and don't tell anybody, How is this enforced? I mean,
there's no enforcing. It's really interesting. This is illegal.
It's just a gentleman's agreement.
Yeah. But the other thing about this is that the license, the AGPL license, is fascinating in the sense that it only says you have to share what you've done if you give the application or the service to somebody else.
Yes.
So if Bonnie makes a whole thing at her house, she doesn't have to share any of that.
Yeah,
until
just for me.
Right. Until she goes, hey, Lyle, why don't you use this cool mediation application I use? And once she's done that with me, then she has to share the source code with me. Not anybody else. So it's very much, the reason why Richard Stallman did this is that he couldn't stand the idea of having an application he couldn't change.
Uh-huh.
And a compiled application you really can't change. You have to have the source. And so he was like, this is stupid. If you give an application to someone, you should also give how it was built.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that philosophy. It's, you know, if you've ever opened electronics, and sometimes in electronics there's like epoxy poured into it to make it opaque so you can't figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
That's very much like, do you really own that? You don't own the secrets inside it? It's strange. And so in this space where you're kind of enforcing transparency, that's what it's for.
But you just use the word enforcing, and yet you say it's just a gentleman's agreement.
Well, if a company were caught using AGPL and not doing the software,
then you have legal backbone.
They would definitely get sued.
Oh, right.
And there
was there a huge lawsuit between who? Oracle, Sun, somebody about
right? SCO. SCO. There's a lot of license battles in the courts, and the GPL and AGPL have been enforced. So that's why companies are careful. Imagine Microsoft Windows or Microsoft Word has an AGPL thing in it, and they haven't told anybody for years. And all of a sudden, one day, somebody leaks in the company, hey, look, this GPL license is here. All of a sudden, all the revenue they've ever made from Word the lawsuit could hit against that money. So it's a major issue when you make a lot of money on software. By the way, the GPL license is if you've compiled an application and given it to somebody, you have to give them the source code. The AGPL is if you're running a service on the internet that uses GPL, you have to download it. So it's an extension because of the wide use of services.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So there you go.
Okay. Thanks.
Thanks, Rich, for the call. If you'd like to call us with questions and comments about technology, you can ask us anything like 1-800-655-5877. Bonnie, I'm going to ask you a question.
What?
During the episodes of GeekSpeak, I should have been taking notes because there's actually answers I had to questions that weren't answered. Do you remember any of those answers, those questions that were asked that we didn't get to answer?
Not
because I wasn't
frontal
here.
Lobes. Hold on, let me processing. Please hold.
We'll let that sit for
all
a while.
Right. Yeah.
And while we do, let's go to Cupertino. Jerry, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a couple of questions perhaps you could give me some assistance with. Number one is I listen to your station over the internet. I stream it because the repeater on the top of the mountain, I guess, was transferred to some other radio station.
Yes.
And so I'm trying to rearrange a few things in my house. Right now I have my stereo system and computer in close proximity so that I can play the thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd like to rearrange some of the stuff. Is there an internet radio device that I'm not interested in streaming video, just radio stations.
Yeah.
Is there an internet radio device that I could use instead of having these, you know, the computer and the stereo next to each other, so I can...
There's a ton of them, actually.
Can you recommend?
Can I recommend? I don't use anybody. Juicebox? Is that the... We're getting a little bit of feedback.
Yeah.
I don't use any of them directly, and I wish that Al were here because he's definitely the internet radio guy.
He knows about that.
He actually worked for a company that created them. I'm just doing Google searches and looking for different radios. I'm looking for the name of the one. Oh man, I hate this. See, this is for example.
Mind.
When I was listening to GeekSpeak, I'd hear things. I'm like, I know the answer to that,
yeah.
And I wasn't here. So now it's happening to me. I don't have the answer, even though I know it.
What's it like, Lyle?
I'm looking for not necessarily something that has speakers to it, because I want to play this thing through my stereo.
But not have your computer right next to the stereo.
Right. So it's more like an internet radio tuner rather than a radio receiver that would have.
Geez, my buddy Craig was using one of those last week. I went over to his
place. So many of them.
Craig, what are you using?
I mean, so I'm just, you know, I'm doing a Google search for internet radio, as lame as that is, but I just want to find where the company is.
Like a Logitech device.
Grace Tuner is a rack mount thing that does this. There's so many of them. You know what I'm going to have to do? I'm going to have to ask you to email me, and when I can think more clearly, I will answer this question very well for you.
All right.
Geeks at geekspeak.org.
Great. great. And the second question dealt with deals with looking in your crystal ball a little bit. I'm looking to get a small tablet. Mm-hmm. The obvious selections would be perhaps the new Nexus 7, which is supposed to be due out fairly soon, or the new Mac Mini, which is also supposed to be out fairly
iPad.
Soon.
iPad Mini? Mm-hmm.
Right. And iPad Mini, I'm sorry.
That's good.
Do you have any thoughts as to, I assume you keep up with rumors as to
I do.
How wonderful these are going to be. So.
Yeah, I mean, I do. I mean, they're going to be better, and they're going to last longer, and they're going to be a little cheaper than the last time. But I'm also in the camp of saying don't wait for the tech to improve, because what you'll do is you'll pay more of a premium for it, and you'll get to use it less. I mean, you'll wait longer to use it. So if you have your lifestyle right now where you want a tablet, go ahead and get one. And that's kind of how I feel about technology. You know, I rarely wait for what's to come.
You're an early adopter.
I would like to get the Retina, you know, the Retina display on the iPad Mini.
Are you sure? Because when you get the Retina, you get less battery life. And that's the thing is, it is the Retina displays are really beautiful. And they're lovely, but maybe it makes more sense to have more battery life on a tablet. At home we have an iPad 2, which we got after the iPad 3 came out. Right. We use that a lot. It's pretty big, and I have a Nexus 7 in my hand, which is actually something I'm using because it connects to the Google Glass thing. And I got to say, it's a great little device. The battery life lasts a long time, assuming you use it right. And I don't think there's a lot of difference between these things. Do you already have a stock in Google apps or iOS apps?
No.
Okay, so you're really going to decide which platform to go to.
Right.
I am about to shift probably to an Android phone away from an iOS phone. So from my whim, my fancy this week, I'd say go for an open source solution like an Android device rather than a closed source solution like an Apple device.
Nope.
But then again, I'm saying go to Google instead of Apple, and I don't feel good about that either. I played with the Nexus Fire recently. I'm sorry, Nexus, Kindle, thank you. And I definitely don't feel like that's the right solution. I think that they're a little later to the game. I think Kindles are great for reading. Get one of the ones that has a reflective surface. But if you want to be able to watch videos and stuff, and if you're really doing this for videos, watching a movie on the iPad, which is a little bit bigger, or the Nexus, there's not much difference. You hold it in your lap. You know, it's close to you anyway.
Right.
There are definitely more applications in the iOS space.
Well, this was a question that I had because we had a sort of like a, I'm just getting into computers, what tablet should I get? And it's tablet, just get a tablet.
Mm-hmm.
Are there criteria that a person should be looking for as they shop for something that will have a little longevity? It sounds like is part of what Jerry's wanting.
You know, I've got friends that have iPad 1s and they still use them all the time. There's not... The truth is, if you haven't used a tablet device,
right,
you're going to use it differently than you think you're going to use it. You probably will not type emails in it. I almost never do. I tap out little responses sometimes, but yeah. We even have a keyboard for the iPad too, and if I were to travel and backpack and I need to write at the same time, I'd probably bring paper. You know, I mean, it's like when it comes down to it, it's used in a different way than you expect. It's mostly a consumption device.
Right.
I think for me, because I like to draw, I'm more interested in a multi-touch surface on a device. iPad 2 doesn't have that, Nexus 7 doesn't have that, and that's more interesting to me. And in that case, I'd want to feel it and play with it first to see if I'd like it.
Mm-hmm.
I almost never do. But if you know what you want to do with it, I can't imagine a Nexus 7 or an iPad, or waiting for the next version, you're going to feel bad about any of those choices. They're going to be the choice you make. They're all the same.
What do you think about the screen form factor of the iPad Mini versus the other 7-inch device?
Yeah, well...
The what factor? I didn't quite catch
the ratio. The screen ratio. iPads still have the same kind of I like the Nexus 7's format rather than the iPad 2. I have not used the Mini much. The Mini, iPad Mini, it's very light, and it's very cool in that respect. But it's also really expensive compared to the Nexus 7. It's, you know, it's an expensive device. It's like double the price, something like that.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine... I think that would be a stopping factor for me. I don't think a price on a phone where you're using it all the time, it's always with you, is as much as an issue for an iPad, because the tablet devices are just kind of secondary in a lot of sense. Unless you go with a more full-fledged laptop-y type tablet and have a full Windows OS on it. And then the question I've got for you is, do you want a laptop or do you want a tablet?
Mm-hmm.
The tablet is, slip it in your bag, it's there for a long time, and then, we can pull it up right now and use it. And I like that feature of it rather than it being my primary machine. I carry around Nexus 7 and Mac OS Air. Mm-hmm.
So for you, a tablet is not a primary device.
That's right. Definitely not.
Yep.
Well, thanks for calling in.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Well, we are running short on time. We don't have time to take Chris's call. Chris, please do email us. I'd love to chat with you about your topic. Or wait on the air. We'll be off air in 3 minutes or so. Bonnie, I just want to express again how much I appreciate you doing the show with me and covering the show and doing such an excellent job, by far better than me most of the time. So thank you for doing that, and thank you for being so awesome.
Well, thanks for having all that knowledge in your brain.
Even when I don't.
Even when you don't.
Or on my face.
On your face.
You're listening to Geek Speak on KOSP. Geek Speak is a registered service mark by David Lawrence and is used with permission. Thanks, David. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at KOSP.org. To find out more about this or any episode of Geek Speak, please visit geekspeak.org. I think we only have episodes going back to 2006, but we've been doing it since 2000, and I have backlog. I got to do that. Please do follow us on Twitter and all that, and you'll find out updates and things of that nature. And if you're curious about anything you heard about today's show, please do go to the episode, which, of course, is July 6th.
It's July now.
It's amazing how that works.
It just keeps happening.
Wow. All right. Well, Bonnie, thanks again. And Rick, also thank you for making Geek Speak what it is. Without you, we'd have nobody calling in. So thank you very much, Rick. For everyone that listens and participates, thanks for being here. We'll be here next week, same time, 10 o'clock on Saturday mornings on KOSP. Stay tuned now for Car Talk.